Capitol Report is a production of Senate Media Services.
One key lawmaker describes a new report offering possible improvements to Minnesota's driver and vehicle services, and another makes the case for universal health care. Plus, the Senate Republicans and the governor lay out priorities for the coming session. Stay tuned for this week's Capitol Report. Welcome to this week's program. I'm Shannon Lurkey. Last year, the legislature passed a law for an independent review of Minnesota's driver and vehicle services. The final report offers 31 recommendations for improvements for deputy registrars, exam stations, and driver and vehicle services. Lawmakers applauded the report at a recent press conference.
You'll see that one of the things that we focus on quite a bit is the customer. And in this case, the customer is the citizen, the resident of Minnesota.
When we ultimately look at this report and begin putting together bills regarding the legislative recommendations, I have hunch that Chair Hornstein and I will be able to come to an accommodation.
These deputy registrars are doing way more input than they did before, and that's why I believe we have to look at these fees. This is a huge step. It's a very bipartisan issue that we should easily take care of this session. We've been waiting on this report to look at fees, so I think this is the year we got to get that done for our deputy registrars.
If we don't, you know, do something to, you know, provide greater financial assistance to these DR offices, we're going to be dropping. They're going to be dropping like flies. We're going to be losing more, like we lost in Bloomington, at a very time when we need their capacity in order to get through the real ID crunch that is once again looming.
The better you serve the customer, the more successful you're going to be. And so I think this is an example of how government needs to start understanding that we need to be responsive to the customer. In this case, it's the constituent, the taxpayer.
Joining me is the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, Senator Scott Newman. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
What exactly prompted you and your House counterpart, Representative Frank Hornstein, to call for this independent review?
In dealing with the bill last year at the very end of session, Chair Hornstein and I recognized that there was a great deal of disagreement, shall we say, between the deputy registrars in particular and the Department of Public Safety. And I have been concerned for a couple of years now that we spent lots of money on the new MnDrive system and scrapped the old MnLAR system. And we've spent lots of money on it. At the same time that we've made that investment, we have the deputy registrar saying, we're going broke, you have to give us a fee increase. At the same time, DPS says, we need more in the way of appropriations and more staff in order to handle this new program. In my mind, something has to give. I mean, we should be seeing a saving someplace. Consequently, Chair Hornstein and I talked about this. We agreed. We were very successful with the independent expert review on MnLARs, led by Mr. King, who did this report also. So let's turn to Mr. King again and see if he will help the people in Minnesota solve this riddle. And that's what prompted it.
And so what do you expect the impact of this review will be? Will legislation come out of this coming session based on the recommendations? What does it mean for the people of Minnesota?
I think this report is going to be more impactful, more meaningful to them than the MnLARs report was, because that's kind of abstract. People didn't really know or understand the computer program. This is going to impact their lives directly, because we are talking about they're getting their driver's licenses and their tabs on their motor vehicles and so forth. And so I think that this report is really going to be important to them personally, and it's going to impact their lives directly, because it concentrates on customer service by a state agency for people in the state of Minnesota. And I think this is really an important report for them. And I would urge people to take a look at it. I really would.
And we will list where to find it at the end. Let's talk about some of the recommendations specifically. And we'll start with deputy registrars. The report calls deputy registrars a key component of providing driver and vehicle services in Minnesota. And you mentioned MnLARs, the failed system, and it's been replaced by MnDrive. But what I read in the report, as I understand it, is that for deputy registrars, this MnDrive system is much more time intensive. And so the fee structure that is currently in use is not covering the amount of time that it's taking. So one of the recommendations is for a change in the fee structure. Is that something that you will look into this session?
Absolutely, we're going to look at that. And I think it's a good recommendation. The amount of work required of deputy registrars to complete a transaction was much greater under the MnDrive system than it was under MnLARS. And consequently, you know, these are some independent businesses, some run by counties and cities, but they have to be able to make a profit, they have to be able to break even, and they're not. Consequently, I think the notion of increasing the fees for the deputy registrars, the amount of which I don't know yet, is a good idea. But at the same time, we have to recognize that if you read the letter from Commissioner Harrington, they're asking for more money and more staff. And we're going to come right back to that argument that I had before, is that something has to give here. I think DPS is going to have to become more efficient, and I think that the deputy registrars have to have a pay raise. They just have to have it, or we will lose them. And deputy registrars throughout the state of Minnesota are integral in getting our driver's licenses and our license tabs for our motor vehicles.
One thing that's been in the news is the wait time for people trying to get driving exams. The state had 93 stations across the state that you could do your exams at. COVID changed that. The Department of Public Safety says that they will go back to 93 by the end of this month, but the report suggests an optimal range of 40 to 50 exam stations. Does that make sense to you? Would that still allow access all across the state?
If Mr. King and his group say it's a good idea, it probably is, because keep in mind this is an independent expert review. And Mr. King and his crew have got a great deal of credibility with the legislature. And candidly, I think with the governor's office. So DPS agreed to go back to 93 because the legislature scolded them. They took down and reduced the number of exam stations to, I think it was 15 throughout the state of Minnesota, which created this backlog. It was unacceptable. It was absolutely unacceptable. We forced them to reopen all of their 93 exam stations, but they didn't like it. Now, just because we did that doesn't mean that we can't look at the new program. And in my mind, if 40 to 50 stations properly staffed, properly run, will provide the service to the people in the state of Minnesota, then that's what we should be doing. And I will promise the people in the state of Minnesota that I'm going to look very hard at the recommendations from Mr. King and his group. Because the old saying, if you're not going to listen to me, you're wasting my time and your money.
One other recommendation that caught my eye was changing the length of time before a person has to renew their driver's license. And I think this is a potential cost saver. But I looked at the website for the Insurance Information Institute, and I was surprised to learn that Arizona and Montana, their driver's licenses are good for 12 years. Many states, the majority of states, range from 5 to 8. Minnesota is only one of 6 that's just 4 years every year to renew the driver's license. So is it likely that maybe Minnesota would make that change and then I'd have to live with my horrible driver's license picture that much longer and potentially have it cost more because, it's lasting a longer period of time? What are your thoughts on that?
Everybody dislikes their driver's license photo, so you're not unique in that. It isn't going to be a cost saver to people in Minnesota because it probably costs them the same amount of money for the same period of time, but it would save them the necessity of trying to renew their driver's license. We're talking about going from 4 to 8 years with our unacceptable pictures on our, but keep in mind, your passport picture is good for 10 years. And what Mr. King was looking for was customer service. What can we do to reduce the hassle for people? And we can do something like this without it costing us any money, save some people some time and hassle and make their lives a little easier. That's all it amounts to. I would expect that we would be taking a real hard look at that.
One more quick question before we go. I think most of us now are getting more used to doing business online, on our phones, in self-service kiosks. Is that a direction that driver and vehicle services should be headed towards into the future, just for convenience and cost saving?
Most certainly they should be, and I believe that they will. The one thing you have to be a little bit careful of when you talk about online information, your privacy is pretty important. And so now you get into data privacy. It's something that we will have to solve. But having said that, yes, the convenience for people to go online or go to a kiosk and just, you know, get their driver's license renewed or buy their tabs, I think it's really important, and I think the people in Minnesota will really appreciate it, and that is one of the recommendations in the report.
Senator Scott Newman, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye now.
Elected officials are laying out their priorities for the 2022 legislative session. This week, Governor Tim Walz outlined some of his proposals at a suburban elementary school.
Families shouldn't have to choose with being home with a sick child or being able to be there on leave after the birth of their child to spend those incredible first weeks and months of bonding together. So we've got proposals in here that address this, like paid family leave. We know that employers, this is an incredible tool to recruit and retain employees, to know that when the time comes and you need this, and God forbid you have a bout of something where you're in the hospital, that you're not choosing between keeping your home, paying your bills, or being able to go back to that job that you had. So we're a state that pays our bills. We get our unemployment system back to there. It's a safety net for folks. We make sure that we're paying the frontline workers and the heroes who were on the front lines during COVID to get them that. We're making sure every Minnesotan gets extra money in their pocket to pay for the increases we've seen because of global supply chain issues. Make gas a little cheaper, buy more diapers, buy formula, the things that people need to do, and then reducing the cost, especially for those families that have children, and then leaning into long-term reductions, thousands of dollars in reductions of the opportunity to get high-quality child care, just like you saw down there. Every family deserves that opportunity.
I was a kid with a different colored lunch ticket and qualified for free and reduced price lunch. And there are a lot of kids like me in this school and across the state who deserve investment. I carry that experience with me in every conversation we have and every decision we make. Right now, families across the state are struggling, and some have been struggling for a very long time.
Minnesota needs to be the best state in the country for families to raise their children, and we believe this budget does that. I would make sure that all Minnesotans know this. Everything you're seeing proposed, including the money back in your pocket and the hero pay and paying our bills and having the strongest financial balance budget in the state, is all being done without raising one single tax. In fact, we're cutting them for the middle class, especially for families.
And Senate Republicans laid out their agenda for the coming session.
Because we know crime rates are up, kids are falling behind, and record inflation is eating away at family budgets. Things are moving in the wrong direction, and Senate Republicans are focused on solutions to put Minnesota back on the right track.
Record violent crime levels are dominating the headlines as well as communities, mostly in our metropolitan area. We know our law enforcement departments are challenged more than ever before, but sadly, the political leadership in some of our major cities has led to massive reductions in police and law enforcement personnel. To address this crisis, we'll work with law enforcement agencies to create incentives and retention policies to help fill their open positions and restore the peace in our communities.
We're going to pick up where we left off last year, parents and kids. We're going to keep it simple. It's about empowering parents and, again, about empowering educators that are working on the ground and not lobbyists and institutions and systems. So back to basics. There's three parts to back to basics. It's an old idea, but it still applies. First is reading. Second is empowering parents. And thirdly, mental health.
Government bank accounts are doing well, but my constituents are paying for it, and their bank accounts are being squeezed. They are telling me that they are struggling with affording everyday life. Their bank accounts aren't facing record surpluses. They are getting hit with rising costs in every part of their lives every single day. They deserve actual relief, not a government spending spree. Our priority is permanent, ongoing tax cuts for lower and middle class Minnesotans, and finally ending the state's punitive tax on senior citizens' fixed Social Security income.
DFLers in the House and the Senate joined forces with the announcement of a new bicameral caucus to promote the adoption of a universal health care system in Minnesota.
When we decided to run for office and we were running our campaigns, we heard a lot from our constituents about wanting to see a comprehensive universal coverage health care plan for Minnesota.
Health care is a basic human right. And we have a responsibility to ensure that everyone in our state can get the care they need. Unfortunately, the employer-based healthcare system in place now was not designed with this goal in mind. Its initial purpose was to give employers a way to attract workers during World War II wage freezes. And while this was appealing to workers, the health of employees was not the primary motivation, and that shows today.
Healthcare justice is a major racial and economic justice issue for our state. We see huge racial disparities between our BIPOC Minnesotans and their white peers when it comes to healthcare outcomes. The infant mortality rate, for example, is disproportionately much higher for black babies, and that's simply immoral. Part of why we see these racial disparities is that under this employer-based get-what-you-can-afford system, BIPOC communities simply are not receiving as high quality of care as their white neighbors.
Nearly 2 years in a global pandemic has highlighted the necessity of this. Not only is it the humanly just approach for everyone to have access to quality health care, but it's a matter of public health and safety. The Minnesota Health Plan would be a single statewide plan that would cover all Minnesotans for all their medical needs, prescription drugs, vision and hearing care, mental health care, dental care, chemical dependency and substance use treatment, medical equipment and supplies, home care services, and nursing home care. It would allow patients to choose their doctors and care providers. It will reduce costs by negotiating fair prices and cutting administrative bureaucracy, not by restricting or denying care.
Senator Jennifer McEwen is a co-chair of the Health Plan Caucus, and I spoke with her this week. You said that your constituents have asked for transformative change in healthcare. How is the Minnesota Health Plan transformative?
Well, thanks for that question. I think that the biggest way that the Minnesota Health Plan is transformative is it takes it out of being driven by profit, right? There are certain areas of our lives where the profit motivation does not serve us well. So we have things like firefighters, police, roads, bridges. We have an infrastructure that really helps everybody in our society. It's not a pay-to-play kind of thing. These are just services that we provide. So the biggest way that the Minnesota Health Plan is a game changer for people is all of a sudden we have a health care system that is driven by care. Care that healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, nurse practitioners, other practitioners within the system, psychologists, all of the people within the care system, the care that they determine is necessary for patients, working with those patients. Right now we have a system where doctors have to make calls to insurance companies to get clearance to give the care that they know that their patients need. We have a for-profit middleman in the center between patients and care providers. And what the Minnesota Health Plan does is take that out of the equation so that care providers can just directly help their patients and give them the care that they need.
Now, you mentioned the middleman right there. So what is the role, if any, for traditional health care insurance under this plan?
There is no role for health care insurance under the Minnesota Health Plan. So you could imagine you wouldn't have to have a health insurance company any longer. That doesn't necessarily mean that health insurance would completely disappear. It certainly is possible that private companies could offer plans, but they wouldn't need to for all of the healthcare needs that people need in their lives, because the Minnesota Healthcare Plan provides comprehensive care. It covers vision, it covers dental, it covers mental health care, it covers hearing. It really is a comprehensive healthcare system for Minnesota. So it doesn't cover things like plastic surgery or sort of elective procedures that aren't medically necessary, but in all other respects, it's a comprehensive.
Now, this plan isn't new. It was actually first put forth by Senator John Marty. He wrote a book of the same name, Minnesota Health Plan, that was published in 2016. He's long been an advocate for health care reform. As a co-chair of this new 60-member caucus to promote change, which tenets of the plan most resonate with you?
Yeah, that's such a great question. There are so many reasons why we should adopt the Minnesota Health Plan, or, you know, preferably even at the national level, a Medicare for All system. It's hard to choose just one, honestly, because when I ran, this is my first term as a new state senator. And when I was running for office, I did hear so many of my constituents contacting me, asking, please, in your role and in your run for office, please help us advance the Minnesota Health Plan. This really is what we need. And there are reasons like for businesses. The system that we have right now for small businesses is just crippling. Small businesses want to provide healthcare for their employees, but they can't. It's just too expensive. It's also really reaching a breaking point with our municipalities. So my hometown of Duluth, the city council across the political spectrum from conservative to more liberal unanimously voted in favor of a resolution asking Minnesota to adopt the Minnesota Health Plan. And that's for cost reasons. Some of the more conservative members on the council are thinking of those businesses, and they're just thinking of Duluthians who need healthcare, right? It is just, it's too great of a burden on our city. It's too great of a burden on our community as a whole to have these costs continue to go up because people are trying to make a profit. And there's only so much you can do. So those are big, huge reasons. Also, I love the idea that we separate healthcare from employment status. So what that does, it frees people up in a way that we haven't really seen before. We heard somebody at our rally today who was a small business owner talking about how this could really be a sort of renaissance and a business incentive and a driver of innovation and development in a way that we haven't seen for many, many years, because people all of a sudden won't be tied down to jobs that they don't want to do just for healthcare. It's immensely freeing. You would know that you were covered regardless. So you can do the kind of work that you really want to do. If you want to start a business, you can start a business. People just won't have that burden and then that tie down of needing to be situated employment-wise and work-wise in a way that they have those just basic healthcare needs met, because those will be provided for by all of us, for all.
Now, critics are going to say that this is too expensive, that taxes will go up. Many people believe that we do need a for-profit system to ensure competitiveness and to reduce waste. How would costs for services be established?
Well, I love this critique, because what we have now is way too expensive. We spend more money on our healthcare in this country than any other of our peer nations throughout the world. I mean, I think we spend over twice of what our neighbors to the north in Canada spend on healthcare. So when we're talking about high cost of healthcare, what we have right now is a bloated administrative system that is really, really unnecessary and also causes just great harm to so many people in the delivery of care, in their finances. Some of the stories we heard today at the rally were just heartbreaking, that nurses told of the patients that they had were helping and the things that those patients were going through in terms of their finances, in terms of having come in late because people are avoiding care because they are worried how they're going to pay for it. But the cost of care, you know, this is another piece that we want to be able to negotiate for prices. We want to be able to control and interact with the market. So actually, in this speaks to another issue is that this isn't socialized medicine, the Minnesota Health Plan. This is, sometimes people might may misunderstand that. This isn't a model like the VA.
If I could just interject just right there, because Senate Majority Leader Jeremy Miller was asked today about the Minnesota Health Plan, and he said that members of his caucus are not in favor, and he called it a, quote, government-run bureaucratic health plan. So briefly, before we have to go, how do you counter those arguments that this is socialized medicine or it's bureaucratic government or the like?
Sure. He's just wrong about the plan. He should read it. He and talk with me about it. I'd love to have a meeting. I'll reach out to him and see if he wants to talk. But it's not a government-run program in the way that the VA is a government-run program. This is a healthcare system that will still allow private healthcare providers, so hospitals, doctors, clinics, all of the healthcare providers in Minnesota to deal directly with their patients and for patients to deal directly with those providers. And as a community, we take the insurance company role out of the middle of it so that they can deal directly with one another. And we make sure that the system serves everybody and we oversee it in a way. And again, I love to compare it with our other public goods, like firefighting, like police, because these are just essential goods that we should value in our society. And I think that sometimes things get labeled as big government when actually, as in this case, it will provide more freedom to people, more freedom to individuals, more freedom to businesses. This really will open up so much if we can adopt the Minnesota.
Senator Jen McEwen, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Join us again next week as we delve into more topics affecting Minnesotans. I'm Shannon Lurkey, and on behalf of all of us at Senate Media Services, thanks for watching.